Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello and welcome to, or welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and as always, it is my pleasure to spend time with you, and I thank you for investing the valuable minutes of your life to learn with me. I'm very excited about tonight's guest. I am privileged to be able to share with you a number of exciting authors and their work, and tonight's guest is a part of that group. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about Julie and let her introduce herself, and I want to publicly apologize for the glitch we had prior to the show, so I didn't get to check on how to pronounce your last name, so I don't want to mispronounce it. Julie, how do you pronounce your last name?
Oh, you're so funny. It's Winkle Giulioni.
Oh, see, I was right, but I didn't want to take that chance.
There you go.
Thank you. So a little bit about Julie Winkle Giulioni. She has spent the past 25 years improving performance through learning, partnering with hundreds of organizations to develop and deploy innovative training products that are in use worldwide. Julie is well-known and well-regarded for her creative, one-of-a-kind solutions that consistently deliver bottom-line results. And Julie's website is in the show notes, as is the link to her Amazon best-selling book, Help Them Grow or Watch Them Go. I love that title. She is the co-founder and principal of Design Around. She leads multidisciplinary teams that create award-winning electronic and instructor-led training. And you can read more about Julie at her website. So I want to spend time. We have a lot of questions and a lot of great ideas to talk about tonight. So I want to thank Julie for being here and let her jump in with that first question, which is, Julie, what would you like people to know about you?
Well, first of all, I'd like them to know how delighted I am to be here. This is really an honor, Melanie. So thanks for spending the evening with me. And, gosh, I'm just kind of a standard package, a wife and a mom, and I'm active in our community around educational and educational funding sorts of issues. And you hit on some of the highlights. I have a niche consulting firm with my partner, Karen Volotian, who's on the East Coast, and we focus on instructional design for classroom and e-learning and then emerging technologies, trying to create innovative client solutions. And last year, I had the good fortune of being able to co-author Help Them Grow or Watch Them Go, and I think that's the focus of this evening. Melanie, are you still there?
Oh, Julie?
Hi.
Hi. This is the night for my technical glitches. I apologize. I had hit the mute button to cough, and I had this wonderful conversation with nobody. So feel free to be, if we have that dead air time, Julie, just to remind me, I may have done that. So what I had said was we didn't have time for our pre-call chat, other than we did share that we both know Linda Galindo, and Linda has been a past guest here on Spark talking about her book, The 85% Solution, and the Accountability That Works model. So I'm excited to, if we have time, touch a little bit on how we both know Linda.
That'd be great.
And as we move into the content of Julie's work, I want to start, Julie, with what was that seed idea or experience that led to your journey that culminated in the book, Help Them Grow or Watch Them Go?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's such a great question. As I look back on it, the first 12 or so years of my working life, I was blissfully ignorant that there was anything other than awesome bosses in the world. I had just the great fortune of working under folks who, you know, took a sincere interest in me. They got to know me. They cultivated my potential. They encouraged me to explore and grow. And they gave me enough rope to where I could stretch myself without actually, you know, hanging myself. And all those years, I had friends who complained bitterly about their work and their bosses, and I just couldn't understand, you know, what they were doing wrong until in my late 20s, I hit my first bad boss and just had that immediate, visceral understanding of what they had been encountering and the experience of really being debilitated by working under someone who micromanaged. You know, where there wasn't the trust and the encouragement and the appreciation. I felt like a cog, you know, in this wheel, and I was being valued for the number of widgets I could crank out every day, and I was miserable. So it took me a couple of months, but I got myself, you know, out of that situation and found a good boss again, and really have dedicated the lion's share of my career to developing the kinds of leaders that I had the benefit of learning from through my career. And so looking back on that experience, really central to all of my good experiences with bosses was this notion that they created an environment that enabled and encouraged me to grow. And so that kind of brings us full circle to Help Them Grow or Watch Them Go in the book.
Awesome. And this is a question that I hadn't thought of till just now. How did you connect with Beverly Kay, who had previously authored another book that I love called Love 'Em or Lose 'Em?
Yeah. We had been introduced by a mutual friend, and Beverly had actually contracted with my firm to look at redesigning her flagship program. And in the process, we just found that we were very compatible, had some similar thinking and approaches to our work. And when the opportunity presented itself, Beverly invited me to co-author with her.
Well, that is wonderful. And congratulations on having great bosses for so long. I was fortunate, like you, to have great bosses for the bulk of my career. And it makes a huge difference when they get it around the importance of developing their employees. And so we're going to talk about some things that managers can do, some things that employees can do to have those career conversations so that they can develop. But we're going to start with a little higher view, some bigger picture ideas first. Julie, with the current economic environment, state of employment or unemployment as it is right now in the United States, do you think that career development should be a leadership or company priority? And if so, why?
Absolutely, Melanie. You know, I think too many people, too many organizations are thinking that their employees are lucky just to have a job, and they don't have to worry about this whole career development thing or address it until the tide changes and the job market shifts. But, you know, the truth is, despite economic conditions, the best and brightest folks in an organization always have options. And so development helps to keep your star players. But looking more deeply into the organization, you know, just at face value, developing individuals is good for business. People who are more skillful, who know more, who can do more, can contribute more, and that's all good. And then, of course, the biggest reason from my perspective is the whole engagement link. You know, multiple studies have confirmed over time that development is a key driver of employee engagement. And we know that engaged employees tap into that discretionary effort that ultimately delivers bottom line results. So I think probably career development is one of the top priorities that organizations and leaders need to be focusing on today.
I would agree with you, Julie, especially with those folks who are talented and are driven and have a desire to grow and develop. Even if they are employed by companies, if they don't have that opportunity, they're always looking and always watching for that next best job. So for companies who are resting on their laurels, so to speak, when the, as you said, the tide shifts, and sometimes even before, mm-hmm. the people will start to go. And there have been a lot of research around the talent gap, or the fight for talent, or the war on talent. It comes under multiple titles, that one of the factors that helps to retain employees and to help them be engaged, as you said, is the opportunity to learn and to develop. So looking at current organization structures and the conversation around, we want to be leaner, we want to do more with less, and over the last few years, companies have reduced the layers of management in organizations. So because those companies are leaner now, how has career development changed in a company perspective?
That's a great question. You know, I think the picture that we all used to have, and too many of us have today, is career development as the ladder. And the truth is, in most organizations, that no longer exists. The ladder is rickety at best, and it's been totally thrown out the window in most organizations. And I'm not sure really that it ever worked or was big enough to move those who were capable and interested up through the system. But for sure today, given the downsizing, the delayering, the streamlining that you've mentioned, that kind of a focus really doesn't hold water any longer. And so a new metaphor that we introduced in the book that maybe is more appropriate and more, I don't know, aligned with reality and certainly more inviting for everyone is this metaphor of a climbing wall. So we get rid of the ladder and think about career development from a climbing wall perspective. Melanie, have you ever gone rock climbing?
Well, let's just say that my knees have large objections to that because of the lack of cartilage in them. So I've watched people go rock climbing. However, I've not done it myself.
Understood. Well, then you've seen, though, that when you go to one of, especially like one of these indoor centers, the climbing wall is much more lateral. It's much more vertically oriented than it is horizontally. And certainly the top exists. But the top doesn't have to be the goal. You know, there are interesting opportunities and spots and places to explore all across. So you can go over and around and across. And when you link it back to career development, you know, increasingly as I work with clients, I'm hearing that organizations are really looking for generalists, you know, folks who have that broader base of understanding. So this notion of moving laterally and working sideways and broadening one's experience that way might be among the smartest moves people can make today in terms of career development. But then on the wall, too, and trust me, I'm really bad at this, and this is probably why I've learned this technique. When you're on the climbing wall, frequently you need to go down to get over and maybe up to where you want to be. And in the workplace, you know, that hasn't always been honored, and yet there's real value to stepping back, maybe to gathering additional experience in a spot that looks like it's lower on the org chart or the food chain. Maybe step back and shore up a capacity, or there are times in life when you need to balance different dimensions of your life, and you need to take a step down the wall in order to be able to retrench and be ready to continue to contribute and to grow. So from our perspective today, career development looks a lot like this inviting, challenging, climbing wall that has room and opportunity for everybody.
I think that's an exciting and very powerful metaphor, and I think for the employees who are listening and thinking about their own career development, it opens up a new venue of opportunities when they're willing to move sideways or to step down to get the best route up to an area they'd really like to explore or to move to, because for people in the traditionalist, baby boomer, and maybe even some of the older Gen Xers, there's still that concept that you talked about at the beginning, that ladder approach, that the only way you're really moving is if you're moving up. And Beverly alluded to that in Love 'Em or Lose 'Em, that up is not always the best way to develop for people. And I think it's exciting to hear that again. And as I said, for employees to recognize that if there's something that you wanted to try or that you love to do and maybe didn't get the training for it prior to a current position, if there's another position in the company, figuring out how to develop for that position or that area can help you have a longer career with that company possibly.
Yep.
So that climbing wall image is very, very powerful.
Well, and for me, and maybe it's a statement of my strength, but sometimes just staying where I am on the wall can be a challenge. It may be that it's a dicey foot or handhold, and that there's room for me to get stronger and better even just right there where I am without moving anywhere.
And that's also very true, especially with all the changes happening, the speed of change, whether it's technology, social media systems are all changing so quickly that our foothold may become a little shaky at times. That's another great point. So we've been hearing about career development for a long time, some of us, and especially for younger generations, that is a key piece they look for in employment, is that opportunity to continue to learn and develop. So that concept has been around for a long time. So what's new about the approach that you've taken and helped them grow or watch them go?
Yeah, you're right, Melanie. I mean, it's been around a lot, and there's a lot written. There's a lot out there on this topic, and yet leaders still aren't doing it and or doing it well. And so as we stepped back and looked at it, what became really clear to me is that we've maybe overcomplicated and over-engineered what's a natural human act, to help other people grow. And so what we've tried to do in the book is kind of strip it back to its most doable and essential basics that can fit into even the most time-starved manager's schedule. And it all comes down to conversation.
Well, I think you answered the other part of my question, is that why do you think that it isn't being done? And when you said time-starved managers, is that the number one reason these managers are not having these conversations or focusing on career development?
Yep, absolutely. We did some research in preparation for the book and asked managers what's getting in the way. Time, without a doubt, was number one, far and in a way ahead of all the others. But the other things we heard, we ended up calling these things immobilizing myths, because they were myths in that there was like a little kernel of something there, but had gotten spun out of control and was causing these managers to be immobilized and not do what we know is such an important thing. So time was one of the immobilizing myths. But we also had this myth around we don't want to set up unrealistic expectations. If you start talking about development, people are going to want the promotions and the raises and all the things that we as managers don't have in large supply any longer. And so let's not set people up to be disappointed. And then another one of these immobilizing myths was we had managers who really already thought they were doing it. They told us, I filled out the form, I checked the boxes, I met the deadline. What are you talking about? I'm doing it. And so it was sort of like I did the paperwork, the administrative side, but they never got around to the human side of it.
and that's something I definitely want to talk a little bit more about, because anytime a company wants to make that cultural shift or that change of focus to development, I think you hit on the easiest part for people to do, which is the paperwork, the checklist. I got it done. You know, we got the development goals, and then I'm done. And so we're going to come back to that one. Because, again, it's when we don't feel skilled or competent in how to do it that that's another immobilizer. Would you agree?
Agreed. Yep, definitely. And the paperwork is comforting because it feels like, you know, nobody gets into a leadership role with the intention of not developing people. I mean, most of us move into leadership because we want to help people along, and yet then we get buried under and don't feel as skillful. So I think a lot of leaders want to do something, and that's at least something they can feel like they're doing to move in the right direction.
And I think you also just identified something else that's very important, is that at the heart of the matter, managers and leaders understand the value and the power of development. It's giving them the tools to make it realistic for them to fit into that day-to-day busyness and work that needs to be done. And so the approach that you take in this book is very exciting, because it's not a huge model people need to learn. It focuses on conversations. And so let's talk about some more of the concepts from the book, starting with that career conversation. And so how did you come to focusing on having conversations, and how are they important?
Well, we know that growth doesn't come via these heartless processes and checklists and forms and deadlines and all of the administrivia. Growth really happens through intentional interaction and through conversation. And so as we look at leaders who do it well and employees who are growing, what we see is a dialogue. We see conversation that happens a little bit every day versus those big, long career summits. We see learning and development that happens in kind of a layered fashion, just a bit at a time, layering one on top of the other, so that skills and capabilities have time to soak and find their ground and be used. We see that it's happening on an employee's schedule, not necessarily on the organization's schedule. Again, that's where some of these processes fall apart. You know, if I'm not ready to really move my career forward or talk about growth on April 17th when we have our IDP, then I might lose that chance for a whole year, whereas excellent leaders are doing this every day and taking advantage of the opportunities that exist in the workplace to be able to drive those conversations.
Okay, I just have to ask, have you coined the term administrivia?
I don't know. You know, I've used that for years, but it's resonating for people now. So I'm going to coin it. Yes, it's mine.
There you go. You want to copyright that or trademark that. That's the word trademark. If Donald Trump can trademark "you're fired," you absolutely can trademark "administrivia."
Fair
and that's
enough.
How a lot of us feel about that. You know, it's more paperwork. Who has time for more paperwork?
Yeah.
And the power in help them grow or watch them go is the conversation starters, the questions that people can ask, and the reinforcement around doing what humans do naturally, which is have conversations.
Right.
So what kinds of conversations have you found really help to drive development?
Well, as we looked at how to, again, just simplify this, we know that managers are swamped and they have no room left on their plates. And so how could we look at this in an organic, simple fashion? And what we found, we built this little model that just has three simple parts. We've got one part that is what we refer to as our hindsight questions or hindsight conversations. And those are the questions or the conversations that you engage in with an employee that helps that person look inward and backward at where they've been, who they are, what they do well, where their passions lie, what are their real strengths and talents, their preferences, their values, the things they definitely don't want to do. Like, who are they and what do they want to bring forth in the workplace? And there are questions and conversations that can help an employee get in touch with that. Then there's
such
a whole,
as?
Oh,
you know, I'm going to ask you for one or two.
Okay. So what would you be doing if work wasn't an issue, if you didn't have to make money? What kinds of things do you love to do? Which part of your job excites you more than any others? And on the flip side of that, sort of what lessons do you find yourself learning over and over again? It's a great question to figure out kind of where are people in terms of their preferences, because if I have to keep learning that over and over again, that's probably not an area that I gravitate toward and want to be working in. So questions that help to activate insights about who I am and how my talents might converge to support my career fall into that whole hindsight area. Then we've got the category of foresight, and those are the questions and the conversations that help the employee look forward and outward. So the questions that help them understand what's going on in the business, what are the needs of the business, where is our industry going? What are the trends? What are the bigger picture things going on in the broader business landscape? So questions like, what are our customers asking for? What direction do you see our competitors moving in? What are the needs of the organization today, and how are they changing over the next 5 years? Help people think more broadly and get a realistic world view of the business needs and the organization's needs. And that's hindsight, or that's foresight, sorry. And then imagine a Venn diagram where these two realms overlap, and the space where they overlap, where what I'm good at, what I love, what I want to do overlaps with what the business needs, what the organization is, the direction the organization is going, where the industry is headed. That area of overlap is fertile soil to be tilled and to be mined for opportunities, because that's really the space where my talents can find expression in a way that serves the organization and the business and be productive, and that's where we want to look for development opportunities, experiences, and places to learn and grow.
I love that visual model of the two overlapping circles and the idea that as managers, how much easier would our jobs be if we had employees who were using their talents and enjoying the process and then being engaged so that they're giving that discretionary effort you mentioned earlier, because we took the time to help them discover that overlapping area. Because often we talk about development from the hindsight perspective, the insights around the passions. And as a certified passion test facilitator, I always smile when I have guests who talk about passions, because when you do what you love, you're not really working, and you are willing to give that discretionary effort. And so much of the time when we think about development, we think about that, finding out what the employee's good at. The foresight piece, when I was first exposed to this book, jumped out at me as something that was not necessarily talked about by managers to help employees understand that big picture, the issues that you talked about from the business perspective, and then to bring them together with that area of overlap can be very exciting for an employee, either because they figure out there's an ideal space for them in that company, or because they recognize that there is not an ideal space for them at the company.
And, you know, Melanie, now that I think about it, it's also exciting for the employer, for the organization, for the leader in that setting, because they're able to bring that employee's talents to bear in a way that supports the organization. You know, if you're following your talent or your passions in a vacuum, I mean, maybe I want to, I don't know, be a tightrope walker, but in most organizations, there aren't a lot of opportunities to do that. But when we can bring what we want to do into the context of what's needed for the organization, we're talking the ultimate win-win.
Oh, absolutely. And that has a bottom-line impact, which can make such a powerful difference. So are there any different approaches to conversation? As we've talked about the different kinds of questions to ask, are there different approaches to those conversations that would help managers and employees alike get the most value from them?
Yeah. I think if we buy into the premise that it's all about conversation, that conversation really is king when it comes to career development, then I think we'd have to say that the power behind the throne is really the question. It all comes down to questions. And so I frequently tell managers, you don't have to have all the answers. In fact, you don't have to have any of the answers. What you need in order to spark a conversation around career is simply the questions. And this really unburdens managers, because if I feel like as a manager I've got to have all the answers and come up with all the solutions and have all the plans, no wonder I don't want to do that necessarily. But if my responsibility is really to facilitate a conversation and to have the questions, that's doable. I can take that on. And so that creates a dynamic that makes the whole task much more possible for many leaders. A second thing that maybe is a little bit different in terms of the approach that we recommend is that we really recommend losing those long sit-downs in favor of shorter, ongoing, iterative conversations, because we know that 2 minutes every week is going to produce much more powerful results than 2 hours once a year. Now, that said, we know many organizations have instituted these processes to ensure that every employee gets their due once a year during IDPs or whatever it might be.
Yes.
And so I'm not saying throw that out, but supplement those formal sit-downs with these shorter conversations. We talk in the book about growing with the flow, this notion of embedding growth right into the workflow so that an astute leader is able to look around and watch for cues and take just natural workplace occurrences and turn them into opportunities for growth. And the good news is that there's almost nothing in the workplace that can happen that can't be spun toward career growth and development.
Julie, could you give an example of a situation where that could happen?
Oh, you bet. A very common one, someone performs really well. Something goes very well in the workplace. A good leader will pat the person on the back and recognize them for that. A great leader will spin that toward career development by saying, that's fabulous. Which of your skills were responsible for those kinds of results? And how could you teach that to someone else in the spirit of growing the whole organization? And the next time you do it, what else might you add into the mix? Small questions like that take literally a minute or two, right there on the factory floor, on the sales floor, over the cubicle, but they leverage what's happening and kind of a coachable moment, if you will, and get people thinking, what did I do? Or how could I use that differently? Or in this emerging world and the complexity of whatever we're experiencing in our particular business, how could we move in that direction?
And that is a great example of how these conversations, it's like real-time coaching, to be aware and to have that filter going as a great leader or a great manager for those opportunities. And one of the things that's very helpful in the book is that you provide a lot of questions so that managers don't have to come up with them a lot. It's sort of like learning a vocabulary word a day.
Yep.
You could look at a different question a day as you explore questions, whether you ask them of people immediately or you just increase your awareness around questions, or you can use the book as a reference book. Julie, how many questions are in the book?
We put 100 in there. I had this goal in mind that we had to have 100, and so I forced that. But it's funny, after that we decided that we wanted to build this performance support tool to support the book and to support leaders who want to do this. And so we put together what we're referring to as a habit builder, but it looks a lot like a desk calendar with a question a day, Monday through Friday for the whole year, and then some reflection thoughts over the weekend. But just, you know, getting to 100, I thought, ha, we've made it. And that just opened up the door to having to come up with another 100 and I forget how many.
Well, and I'm going to ask, because, you know, great minds think alike, Julie. And so as I was bringing that up and thinking of how I could leverage that, you've already done it with this habit builder. If managers are listening, how do they get a hold of that support tool?
They could get in touch with me on the on my website, and I will we'll get them a prototype. We've just gotten a small number of prototypes, but they look really cool. I'd love to share them.
Well, I will absolutely be following up with you.
But you know what? I think all of this says is there are so many questions to ask.
Yes.
I mean, the opportunity is endless, and you can't get it wrong. You know, any question is going to get people talking and thinking, and that's the goal here.
Well, and speaking of any question, the subtitle of the book, Help Them Grow or Watch Them Go, is Career Conversations Employees Want to Have. Mm-hmm. So for the people listening to the call who are employees, how can they leverage this book to have career conversations with their managers?
Oh, I like that idea. It would work very well for them because it's sort of like, career development conversations. It's a little bit like a dance, isn't it, that we're doing? And so I guess the book lays out some of the steps. And so as an employee, if you don't have a leader who volunteers this or who isn't particularly adept at career development, there's no reason why you couldn't, as an employee, pick up the book, ask yourself the questions, and initiate a conversation volunteering information to your boss. There's no reason you couldn't use many of these questions with associates, with your colleagues, or even people at home to help tease out some of the important issues that would cause you to frame the development opportunity in your own mind as an employee. That's a great idea, Melanie.
Like I said, great minds. When you have that synergy around conversation, because that's what Julie and I are having right now, is a conversation. And as we each talk, it sparks ideas.
Yep.
And I will say thank you for the compliment, Julie. And I'm going to pause for a moment. I'm going to give the call-in number again for people who are listening live who may have questions for you. And for those listening online, the chat room's available. So you're welcome to post a question for Julie. The phone number is 347-215-8390. And I will add, Julie, that a number of my listeners who don't listen live will download the podcast later. And so what is the best way for people to connect with you if they have questions later?
Probably through my website, which is juliewinklegiulioni.com, which is a huge mouthful.
And it is in the show notes for the show, so you can click on the link to go to Julie's website. You can also follow Julie on Twitter, and I believe it's at Julie_WG. Is that right?
Oh, you're so good. Yes.
Oh, thank you. I have sessions on how to have a great memory, too, which works for me most of the time. So I don't see anyone calling in at the moment.
I guess we just have to talk among ourselves.
We will talk some more. And I will keep checking the chat room, and we'll keep checking. So, ladies and gentlemen who are listening, you are most welcome to call in, and I'll just keep checking back. So we do have more questions and more cool stuff to talk about related to development and career conversations. Julie, what is one of your favorite parts or themes in the book?
I like so much of it. It's like asking which child you love best.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. That wasn't a very fair question.
You know, I think I am partial. I think I'm partial to some of the information we have in there around what it takes to make for a good conversation. One of the topics we address in the book is curiosity. And, frequently say you can fake listening, but you can't fake curiosity. And even since the book, I've spent a considerable amount of time researching and doing some writing with Beverly Kay on the subject of curiosity, and it's really kind of captured my imagination.
Good. So it's an ongoing process.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the things that I enjoyed about the book, in addition to the content itself, is the layout of the book, because the way that it's presented is not dense information, a lot of text. Can you talk a little bit about the thinking that went into the way that this book is laid out?
Thank you so much for the compliment. We really appreciate that. It was very intentional. We wanted to put together a book that was an easy read and that was a fun read. And both Beverly and I tend to be kind of visually oriented and like the play of words and images. And so it was a very intentional effort that we undertook. And gratefully, our publisher, Barrett Kohler, was up for doing something a little bit different. We had the art director, the internal art director, Diane Plantner, who was fabulous, helped to kind of craft the macro plan. And then she assigned us the next team to develop the book to the next level. And I remember at the time being a little bit, a little bent out of shape because she assigned us an external partner, a contractor to Barrett Kohler. And I thought, gosh, if they really, loved us, wouldn't it have kept us internal? And I really did. I had a little, moment there. And as it turns out, they really needed to have someone from the outside take it on because it was so different. They didn't want to, to force it through any kind of standard processes. And so we were really fortunate to get to partner with Book Matters and their team, and they were the ones who were able to, through their art direction and the playful typography and the layout, really create a fresh look for the book.
And so even just flipping through the book and the way that it's laid out with the imagery and the concepts and the what I'll call mnemonic or memory strategies that make it easier to recall,
mm-hmm.
So you may have to reference the book later, is very, very powerful. And I can't remember if on Amazon you can look inside, but I would suggest that you check that out on Amazon and just look at the layout and the way that it presents itself. It's non-threatening is the word that comes to mind this topic.
Good, thank you. Well,
I think for managers, go ahead.
Oh, one of our goals, too, was that no matter what page you opened, there'd be something you could do, that there'd be some nugget, some to-do, something that would be helpful, even if you didn't read it from start to finish.
And that's what I was going to add about busy managers, that you don't have to read it in a linear fashion from start to finish. You can flip it open. If you just have a few minutes, it's what I refer to as a bathroom book for busy people. If you can take it into the bathroom with you, read it a few minutes a day. That's probably too much information for some listeners. But for people who say, I don't have time to read a book, this is a great layout and a great model for a way that you can get great value, usable value, actionable value, as you said, from just a few minutes with the book.
Well, and it's funny, Melanie, because we our editor on this book was Steve Prasanti, who's the publisher at Barrett Kohler. And so we got just, the best of the best on that. But his first lesson to me, of course, Beverly probably already knew this, having authored before, was that you got to get it all in the title. You've got to get your whole message in the title. Don't even count the subtitle. Make it the title. Because people have a tendency to read the title in the back of a book and they consider that they've read the book. So I guess the bottom line is help them grow or watch them go is the the message anyway.
Yes, it is. And earlier it reminded me, as you were talking at one point about one of the conversations that I often have when people say, managers say, well, what if we train them and they leave? And my response is, and what if you don't train them and they stay?
Right, right. Well, and you know, it's very interesting you should bring this up. I'm working with an organization, an insurance brokerage house, and one of their leaders is magnificent at developing people. And for whatever reason, internally there are some issues, and many of those folks that he's developed have moved on to the competitor. And to hear him talk about it, it's a totally different slant on the situation. He's not bitter. He doesn't feel ripped off or used. In fact, because he has these colleagues, former colleagues and mentees out at competitor sites, he says that he's been able to collaborate and actually bring in additional business, bigger business than he could have done alone because they were working together. So talk about a paradigm shift, that the loss of that talent didn't hurt him. He is actually using it to help him and his firm.
And when we're open to changing our perspective, all sorts of opportunities can become visible.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful example of how you can look for the benefits of developing people. I know there was a manager at one of the credit unions that I had worked with in the past who people love talking about lateral shifts. Anytime she had a position open in her branch, she had a huge number of internal applications because she had the reputation of developing the people who worked for her. And as a result, yes, she had more turnover because people were growing and being promoted or moving to other departments in the business. And for her, that was very rewarding. They were still in the company. They were still in the credit union contributing.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just weren't with her.
Yeah.
And so that bigger picture mindset made a great difference for the company. And because she was willing to look at it from a different perspective,
right?
And now I have to retrain someone.
And wouldn't it be great if as organizations we could figure out how to start measuring that? How to start assessing and evaluating that, how effectively people are growing.
That would be a great next step, Julie.
Yeah, that's another book.
That's another book. And I think sometimes we can look at the impact, that maybe not necessarily a numerical metric per se.
Yeah.
It's what other metrics can we look at? What other ways can we assess the impact on the individuals, the teams, and the organization?
Yeah, yeah.
Great question. Speaking of questions, they're great questions. We have about 12 minutes left, and I know there is a client that I'm working with who is a coach, and she is looking at how she is working with clients who are exploring as well. And so I think we've already touched on this, about how people can use this book for themselves, for reflection. It's also a great resource for coaches, and it's one that I suggested to her because, again, it's questions. It's a great resource for questions. So for people who are coaches or are maybe working in a career development or career planning position, this book would be a great tool. Have you had clients who have used the book that way?
Yes, yes, and in organizations. I'm working with several client organizations where they've assigned sponsors and mentors and guides who aren't necessarily the employee's direct supervisor to play that kind of a coaching role. And it's working very well in that setting as well. Because it's the questions. You know, it really is just about the facilitating the conversation and helping to spark those insights and activate the excitement and the interest that's there, just ready to be activated.
And building relationships with more people in the organization also is helpful to retention of talent.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, without a doubt.
So, Julie, for again, let's go to the managers. who are listening to this call, what can a manager do tomorrow, because this is in the evening when we're recording this live, what could they do tomorrow to develop their staff?
Three things. Pick a couple of good questions and just start asking them. Just go out and start talking to people using any kind of open-ended question that could fall into the hindsight, looking backward, what am I good at, what have I done, how does that play out, foresight, where is the organization going, or the insight, where those two overlap. So just pick a couple of good questions and start asking them. Number two is there's really value in helping people learn more about the business, really understand the industry, see the bigger picture, because all of that, you know, that creates the guardrails for our career. It's really powerful input for career development. And then the third thing is, and this could be a whole other topic, but as leaders, we need to make sure that we're thinking about developing others through experiences versus having to put people in new roles or even send them to traditional training. If we can start helping people find, matching people up with a development experience that meets their need, that's how we can kind of scale development to the level that we need to in organizations and keep people and development relevant.
So one of the things that came to mind as you were sharing that third piece, which we haven't talked a lot about, is giving people experiential opportunities. Yeah. So what came to mind was if there is a project in another department that they may be able to work on as part of their development plan to contribute to that. Is that the kind of experience you're talking about?
Oh, absolutely. There is real work that needs to get done. And development doesn't have to be separate from that. So the really powerful leader is going to look at what someone needs to learn and see the real work that needs to be done that could be a petri dish for that development. So is it attending meetings? Is it coaching someone else? Is it, as you said, taking on particular projects? Where we can find the intersection between what somebody needs to develop and the real work that needs to be done, it's a no-brainer at that point to help people develop.
Absolutely. And if people are struggling, managers are struggling with some ideas of what kinds of experiential opportunities could I do in our business, is there a resource you could recommend to send them to or a conversation they might have with someone to get that insight or those ideas?
Well, frequently in organizations you have your talent management department that has begun to amass a kind of, you know, encyclopedia of those kinds of development opportunities. There's also a great book, For Your Improvement, that is just this catalog of idea upon idea for how to accomplish particular developmental ends.
Great.
And yet, I think most frequently, if we step back as a leader, if we can just kind of push the pause button for a moment, step back and look at the gestalt. You know, what's the work that needs to be done? What is it that somebody needs to learn? And start teasing out those areas of commonality. It'll frequently rise to the surface. We'll see it.
I think that's a good point about sometimes just stepping back. And having the conversation with the employee may also give some additional insight into what they might do
mm-hmm.
in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's something that you haven't done before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something new around, maybe it's a job shadow opportunity
yeah.
that nobody's had brought up before, you hadn't considered as an option in your organization.
Well, and again, we want the employee to own their development. And so as a leader, you know, you don't have to shoulder the burden of coming up with all these ideas. So to your point, ask the employee, what do you see as an opportunity to develop that skill, to grow that capacity?
Absolutely. So, Julie, as we're coming down to just 5 minutes, time just flies. on these interviews. I still have a few questions that I'd like to ask you, the first of which is, if you were giving just one piece of career development advice to managers, what would it be?
To really remember and to embrace your role as a facilitator of this process. You know, like I just said, you don't. An employee has to own their own development. Nobody else can do that. And so as leaders, it's your job to figure out how to support and guide and nurture and encourage while making sure that the employee still is the one with skin in the game on this one.
And so now we're going to flip it to say, ask Julie if you have just one piece of career development advice for employees, what would that be?
I think the employee, a smart employee, is going to look around and figure out how they can develop in the job, in the role they currently have, in a way that helps the organization reach its goals. So it's sort of finding that sweet spot, like we were just talking, where what I want to do can find its expression in my own role and help the organization. At that point, development, who's going to say no to that? It's the ultimate win-win.
Absolutely. Julie, what is a question that you wish I would have asked you in this interview that I have not yet, and how would you answer it?
Well, you've done a really good job, so you haven't left that much for me to work with here.
Thank you.
But maybe just something around where I see development going, because I love to do that crystal ball thing. So as I think about development of the future, I have to believe that career conversations will continue to play a really central role. But, you know, technology, if we use it intelligently, could do so many powerful things for us. I look at systems like Ripple, where it amplifies and expands the feedback that we can get by tapping into that larger network of peers and associates. I mean, getting really up-to-date, candid information on performance and perceptions could do a lot in terms of supporting career development. Same with, like, gamification as a tool to encourage that in-role or that in-job development where there'd be some visibility of certifications or badges or something like that that would draw attention to important growth that you're experiencing in a position. And that might balance out this need that so many of us feel to move into a new role as kind of evidence that you're not stagnating, that something's happening with your career.
Great question and answer. Thank you, Julie. We've got only a couple minutes left. First, do you have any new projects in the works that you wanted to talk about?
Gosh, we're working with some great clients on interesting stuff. My pet project right now kind of blends two of my loves, leadership development and stand-up paddle boarding. So I'm refining the stand-up leader, which is a retreat that I want to launch this summer that lets people learn about leadership while having a lot of fun on a stand-up paddle board.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Not for me because my knees wouldn't be happy.
Oh, back to your
knees.
Those,
but for those people who have good knees, that's a great way to make something an experiential learning opportunity.
Yeah.
So have you back and talk more about that later when it's in full bloom. And finally, Julie, in our last couple minutes, what are one or two key messages that you would like listeners to take away from our interview today?
Development, from my perspective, is probably the most intimate personal connection that we have with employees. You know, when you think about it, it touches their hopes and their fears and their dreams. And it's also one of the things that employees want most but feel like they get least. And so as leaders, we really need to find a way to honor and prioritize development. And it's easier to do that, I think, if we reframe career development as these ongoing iterative conversations that can happen right there in the workflow. And it all just starts with a question.
Thank you so much, Julie. It has been such a pleasure talking with you and sharing your perspective and the exciting work in Help Them Grow or Watch Them Go.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure visiting with you, Melanie.
And I thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen, and for downloading this podcast. And I invite you to check back over the next several weeks. I'll be scheduling an interview with Mark Miller about super teams, as well as more authors with more great resources that may be the spark to ignite a positive change in your life. As always, please take action on something you heard that may be a positive solution to ignite a positive change in your life. Thanks again, Julie, and take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.